Welcome to Just JKing, the podcast where we transform your HR headaches into high fives. Whether you're a founder, CEO, or just someone with HR questions you're too afraid to ask, we've got the insights, laughs, and light bulb moments that you crave.
Enjoying the show? Hit that five-star review and subscribe now so you never miss out.
Welcome back to Just JKing with Jennifer and Kim.
Today, we are chatting with Manu Varma.
Manu's experience includes 25 years in the HR technology space, with the majority of those years spent with Traction, on-demand Traction Ventures in the Salesforce ecosystem.
He's also worked across Canada, the US, China, India, and France. He has a passion for technology, people, community, and using business as a force for good. And we are so excited to chat with him today.
Welcome to the pod, Manu.
Hey, thanks for having me here. Greetings from the West Coast. How are you both?
We're great.
We're great because it's not 6 a.m. here.
Really? It's a little past 6 a.m. now here, so I'm doing okay.
So let's kick it off. One of the things that you talk quite a bit about is purpose-based hiring. What is purpose-based hiring? And more importantly, why is that so important today?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think for this happened, I think the genesis for this happened to me about 14 or 15 years ago, working with a founder of a company, and his wife works in the nonprofit space. And in this ecosystem, we started getting these referral fees, and we never really felt comfortable getting referral fees for bringing in business. And this kind of spawned this for good component and kind of created an awakening for me. So for me, this kind of purpose-based hiring is really about looking at that holistic evaluation of the person coming in and getting beyond just the resume and looking at values alignment, what are their long-term goals, but really what's their motivation and their personal values and how it can match that with not only what the business is doing, but the impact that the business is doing to society. So I think for me to break it even down further, it's about looking at the business's ethos, logos, and pathos, but also that individual coming in, what their ethos is, what are their ethics for joining, what is the emotion behind it, and how logical is what the business doing mean to that person in particular. So that's for me is what that purpose-based hiring is, and it's just so important to me, given the space I'm in and kind of green tech, clean tech, but even previously in just the SaaS role, because I think government's not fixing a lot of these problems. And I think SaaS is really leaning in to solve some of these problems in conjunction with the nonprofit world. So if we can bring some of that ethos from the nonprofit world into the business world, I think that's where this kind of purpose-based hiring works and wins for me.
Let me ask you a question, because we also know that employees who align with the company's values and purpose and are really passionate about what they do actually perform better. The big question for a lot of companies today, though, is how do you identify it in an interview process and how do you test for it? Because especially being in green space or clean space, I think most people would say, yeah, I like clean air. You know, I'm into that. But how do you kind of really assess that connection and that alignment to ensure that your hiring is effective?
There's a balance here, right? Because I mean, skills-based hiring, it's not about throwing that out the window. I think it's about having really being able to define what the non-negotiables are for the role. Maybe there's three, maybe there's five from a technical perspective. And then incorporating some of those purpose assessments, and they can either be very technical in the purpose base or even just conversational, right? Is it, what are you doing in the community to give back and these types of things? What is your motivation for driving here and finding that balance? But then also having an ability to evaluate those transferable skills that may not come out in a resume, right? But that may not be, well, yeah, I might not have 20 years as a project manager, but I have other things, maybe in the programmatical experience in the nonprofit world, which I can kind of bring into. And I think that's what's really important. I think what we see a lot, I think in most businesses, we put recruitment as almost an introductory role into the HR space, which I think is fundamentally flawed, right? And I think that's where we get these recruiters, well, I don't know how to package this person up that's maybe been in and out of industry or taken some non-traditional roles or have flipped between different roles. Well, how do I package this up? And I think as a community in the HR space, I think we can do a better job at helping and putting recruiting as such a important part of the employee life cycle, and hence the purpose piece, right? Being able to storytell and hit the candidate, whether it's an existing employee, to continue to storytell, to hit those ethos, pathos, and logos on a regular basis. I think oftentimes, as I've seen in my past, we do a great job in the recruiting cycle, get them in, and then we kind of forget to continue to evolve and evangelize the stories. And I think in a past job, we did a great job. I hired someone to be our storyteller, right? Just to make video, to use music, to talk about all the things that we're doing really well, and surfaces on at least a quarterly basis. So there's always that reminder. So then it also makes it easier for our existing employees to ABR, always be recruiting on my behalf. It makes my job a little easier.
I think this is really fascinating. So, as an HR consultant, I have some clients who have attempted to do this with varying levels of success. And I think what's really tricky is that sometimes the outward-facing consumer brand is maybe not completely consistent with the culture and values that you're trying to promote inside the organization. You know, I think, well, tobacco companies, for one, must really struggle with that, you know, because they obviously want to have a positive culture, but they sell, I don't, well, I won't make a judgmental comment on what cigarettes do to people, but you get my drift. So how on the front lines, like as a hiring manager, do you identify how to align with the purpose of the company during the selection process? And I love your point about recruiters shouldn't necessarily be the most junior HR people on the team.
Well, and I also just want to interject there because, Jennifer, I think you raise a really good point. Like, there are people who are very passionate about tobacco products, and I make no judgment, but it's about finding the people who are passionate about the purpose of the organization, regardless of our own judgment of whether that purpose is good and just, right? So there's, you know, I always say, like, there's a pot, every pot has a cover. There are employees who are going to be passionate about the purpose of the organization. It's about making sure that it's well defined. And that's something I know we're going to talk a little bit more about. And being able to really assess whether or not an employee truly is a great candidate who does align.
Yeah. So I guess to make it an actual answerable question for you, what can hiring managers do to kind of balance all this and increase the success of the long term, or I guess the longevity of the hires that they're recommending?
I think Kim's kind of alluded to it already, right? I think first of all, having that a really crystal clear mission vision and not everyone's going to interpret that the same way. And I think that's why it's so beautiful and important to have different voices and different people on the table during that recruiting cycle. So not only people can see themselves at the company and see a reflection of themselves, but also people can pick up the diversity of thought of what's really going to resonate for the incoming candidate, and be able to pepper those in so people can pick onto something. So it's not just finding that passion for people and enabling them to highlight this. So as an example, I think in past roles, I'm a big fan of like the demo interview or scenario-based interview of like giving them a loose set of instructions, create your fake company, show us that you have some business acumen, show us that you got some creativity, and let's apply what kind of the technical specifications of the role, and you run with it. Let's role play it out. You prescribe us to be certain roles, head of marketing, head of sales, head of tech. And then us as interviewers will role play it out and kind of tease out these what, how does this passion come through? How does the technical alignment come through? And for me, that just gives a really great situational, scenario-based, real-life example where people can bullshit their way through, I think, questions and behavioral interviews. But in this kind of demo scenario, people thinking on their feet, you're asking some tough questions. And we really get that sense of, are they really going to not just fit into our culture, but be that values add is what I'm looking for.
As you're talking, I'm kind of noodling internally, like whether storytelling could play a role in this process. So, not just on the part of the organization, but encouraging storytelling on the part of the candidates. So, in a more organic way, where it's not a prepared response, but you really get a better sense of who they are as a person based on whatever story they choose to tell you or how well it's articulated, the authenticity of it. I don't know if you've ever used that, but that's kind of just something that came to mind as you were explaining that.
Absolutely. I've always put at least put the past 15 or 16 years in the application form. Tell me about what you do for your spare time. Tell me about your biggest accomplishment. Tell me about an embarrassing moment, right? Just to put some humor in it. Now, of course, with the rise in ChatGPT, it's super interesting. Before that, got a lot of really authentic answers, which also helped me out catalog those answers and use what their interests were to reward them as they kind of went on in the interview in their employee cycle. Now with ChatGPT, it's pretty obvious to see what people have copied and pasted in, which is also doesn't mean I'm going to discredit them, but also, hey, you mentioned in your application form, let's dive a little deeper into that. And then you're met with this, right? So it still works for me today, and I think it just really humanizes the candidate ultimately, and that's really what I want. We get a lot of applicants that'll put NA or, you know, again, helps me screen through the candidate pool more effectively to get that human behind the person. So for me, storytelling, absolutely. I think on both sides of the coin. Again, going back to my recruiting example, it's so important that I want recruiters to have their kind of almost canned stories to tell, right? Oh, there's this type of employee. Let's talk about this story about heart. Let's talk about this story that really hits that kind of logic into the story. And for me, that's really what makes a good recruiter a great recruiter that can not just evangelize the brand, hire the person effectively, but really create that tenuousness that they're buying into what not only what we're doing, but what we're selling, but from a larger perspective, what is our purpose, right? I think of like the United Way, they do a really great job in their corporate campaign. I'll remember like they do that. Hey, you go to the initial orientation session, stand up if you've had someone that's been hit by cancer, stand up if you've hit by someone. And eventually the whole room is standing up. And that was so powerful. So to try to bring that level of storytelling and make it personal is just important on the recruitment side, but also I think candidates could really wow us in the process.
So if you're pasting in a generic thing off ChatGPT, candidates listening, you are missing your best opportunity to sell yourself in this process. That's a, yeah, it's a bad strategy.
So I love the example about the United Way, and I particularly love the example because, like you said, at the end of that process, everybody is standing up because everybody has their own interpretation of how it is that they would connect with that purpose. And that's something that always concerns me, or something that I always love to chat about is, how do we make sure that we're not building in bias? I'm going to give you an example. There was a company who may have been in the clean air space who had a recruiter who was doing some work to find an executive level position who asked candidates what kind of car they drove. Let's be honest, not everybody can afford these days to get an electric car. And I had heard stories that this particular recruiter disqualified candidates because they said that they didn't have an electric car. And then the recruiter's position was, how could they possibly be passionate about the work that we do in the clean air space if they have fuel-based vehicles? Now, for me, that was, aside from all of the other things that we could talk about in that process, there's a bias there. It's really one that the recruiter didn't intend, but there is absolutely a bias built in. And so how do you make sure during this process where you're really trying to assess, the alignment of values, that you're not unintentionally introducing a bias to the process?
Maybe they took the bus.
Well, if they took the bus, I think that would have been better than the answer of telling them that they had a fuel-based vehicle that was 23 years old. In this
I choose to
particular
walk by my
situation
life.
with that recruiter.
It's so interesting. I mean, a bit mortified, but I've seen it happen in so many different ways. I think back to at a past company, part of our interview cycle, kind of the last step was a kind of group interview, but we did it in a non-office setting. We happened to have several wakeboarding boats that we would kind of we had this ride a clock thing where people could go wakeboarding every morning before work. And so they decided to bring this candidate, unbeknownst to me, onto the boat. Well, she was a software developer and a female that was now invited onto a boat with three guys in a bathing suit, right? Just oh,
Ew, good Lord.
so
Ew.
I was obviously so excited about her candidacy. I mean, this was like 15 years ago to have a female with that mid to senior level dev experience. I'm like, she was a great interview. She was personable. She wasn't just a code monkey. She could articulate requirements. And when I got the review back, well, she was kind of quiet. I'm like, tell me what happened. Well, we took her out in the boat. You took her out in the boat, right? So, but it's about values alignment, and we're in this business. This is such a big cultural artifact. I'm like, whoa, hang on a second. Like, can you put yourself in that person's shoes for a second? Would you like three type A people, and you're like, think this through. And I understand that wakeboarding might be a really important part of this culture for you, and woven into the purpose of like who we are and how we do things in building community. But we missed the mark, right? So going back and brought her back in and sheepishly, managed to resurrect the situation. So I tell that story in that somewhat related. How do we mitigate these well-intentioned efforts to bond into the values of the company? Again, going back to non-negotiable technical goals for the role, to have that balance. I feel in this perspective, it got way out of culture. What are some of the other demographic things that we're considering for this role? What's also happened during the rest of the interview cycle? Who was participating? And I think having that, again, that holistic overview from the moment that candidate touches the company to that moment in time. So the application process, the first call, whatever that process might look like. I think we also overshadow kind of calibration and don't think about calibration a lot internally, because it can get diluted as time goes on. People get comfortable, right? We're humans, right? I also, hey, you're interviewing, you've got 20 interviews today and it's now 4 p.m. Are you going to be the same interviewer at 4 p.m. than you were at 7 a.m.? Probably not, right? So these little things and ticks or biases are gonna creep in. So I think putting in some guardrails in terms of how we do things, understanding human nature and kind of our own busy days also helps. Yes, there's lots of technology that can help us out in this, but that also provides a bias in and of itself. So for me, I always want humans to be screening everything. Yes, we can use tools to support us, and we also need to make sure that a human eye is touching every application form in some way, to make sure that we're not making these knee-jerk reactions that are so laden and seem so obvious to us. But I guess, everyone's experience is also different, right? And I think that's why calibration is so important to me, and kind of training and professional development. I'm obviously very passionate about the recruiting side, hence why I've kind of really inserted myself, even though I've been in this industry for 20, 25 years. But I think it's really important that to, I'm by no means perfect. I've certainly made some gaffes over the years, but I think by revisiting, having regular cadence, checking in, that calibration will help ensure that we have that whole balanced view of who's going to come in. Purpose is important. Technical skills are also important. Values alignment is also important. That values add pieces, which kind of really changes the conversation. To use your example again, Kim, like, okay, so you asked the question, I have a fuel-driven car, and great. So what else are you doing? Well, maybe I mitigate my business flights to minimize my carbon footprint, right? That's a value add thing which you can put in, and I think that's the next level of questioning and investigation, as opposed to what binary you have or you don't have.
But I love the idea of calibration because calibration also assumes multiple people are participating in the process, which means that there are different eyes on this candidate, different questions, different perspectives, and everybody coming together. So the candidate may have been interviewed by one person at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, but ultimately had another opportunity with somebody who may have been fresher in the day. I
And
think.
hopefully not on a boat in a bathing suit.
I agree, no boats and bathing suits. But I also, I think that those are some of the points that you're raising are really important and things that we don't think about often enough. So yes, boats and bathing suits, even though that's your culture, thinking about how that might make someone uncomfortable. But organizations who talk about diversity and talk about valuing kind of people's family lives and valuing everybody to have a personal, life outside of work, and then asking to conduct an interview at 6 p.m. or 7 p.m. or even 7 a.m. Or somebody who says that they value diversity and then bringing a full male or a full female or a full, Caucasian group of leaders to interview candidates, every single aspect of that process, that is a moment that matters for employees. And the experience that they are going to get is not only the vocal experience, the audio of the question that they're being asked and the opportunity to answer it. There is also a representation in how you represent yourself in that meeting. How important do you think those things are, and how do you make sure that you're architecting them correctly in order to represent the values of the organization in that very critical moment that matters?
Consistency, I think, is important. So by defining, for example, a recruiting cycle, right, making sure it's consistent for everyone coming in the door, right? If it's a four step, if it's a three step, and making sure that we're testing for similar things in every point of those touch points. So I don't want an overemphasis on kind of the purpose, because I don't want us to want to negate any of the technical requirements we need for the job. I think during each step, we are being very explicit to our evaluators. So I think this training and calibration becomes very important to me. And making sure those, even the coordinators that are assigning people to these interviews of, hey, like, do you have a diverse platform of people from an age perspective, from an experience perspective, and not just your three best friends that you know that are going to say yes, right? Having specific parameters of what we're looking for. And I also think providing guidance, not just scripting, but guidance, right? Here's the types of things we're looking for. Because it's interesting. I think back to, we used to have these culture interviews, we'd call them, and we'd have them over meal, breakfast, lunch, or after work. We'd give people the opportunity. And I remember meeting with this one candidate saying, hey, well, tell me about something fun or embarrassing that's happened in your life. And then he's like, yeah, I got really drunk and crashed my car into a telephone pole. We're at the last stages of a very difficult role to fill, right? Like solution architect level. Of course, my mouth is now on the ground. I'm like, okay, wow. Okay. So it's pretty clear you feel comfortable enough sharing a fair amount. And then what happened? He's like, oh, I fled the scene. I'm like, okay, right?
I am never going to recover from this episode. I'm still thinking about the idea of law firms I worked for seeing me in a bikini.
When companies take their entire, team off to places like, I don't know, Cancun.
Right?
Or
Never seen
Vegas.
that happen
I cut that
before.
yet. Cut that, Jennifer.
No, but seriously, I've heard like
Like, that'd be
Vegas,
interesting.
New Orleans. I'm like, no.
That story I tell just is illustratively how, yes, it's great. The comfort we're sharing, people are like, people walk by, oh, it's a hilarious story. I'm like, hang on, people. But did you not? Yes, it's great that he was comfortable enough to share this with us. It was awesome. But also, there's a mismatch in judgment here in sharing too much. And then his actions following that, fleeing the scene. I said, I'm sorry, I'm a no.
It's a
Or
good
yes.
balance between the honesty, because you're going to do, let's say, a criminal record search, and you're going to end up finding out this information anyway. So I like the idea of telling you up front what you're going to find in the back end, but agreed, there's got to be a balance in how things are shared. And more importantly, did that person recognize that fleeing the scene was probably not the right thing to do?
And I mean, had I
Okay.
not done that interview, the other two people were both a thumbs up.
True enough.
Think it's just very important to have that kind of that reference point, that guidelines. As much as I want to trust people in the interviews and bring more people in the interview cycle, I still want to have some level of like a filter to kind of judge what's my evaluator's judgment, what's their experience in the organization, what's their experience in market, how are they able to assess and synthesize people's answers. And even going back to built, we've all done very extensive behavior interview guides of what to look for when it comes to STAR, but then what are the flags to look for? What are the green things to look for? And I don't want to be prescriptive, but I think it's really critical that we outline, yes, we're looking for purpose at each step of the way, and we're also looking for technical skills and all those other soft skills, right? Or that will make them an effective employee to add to our culture and not just be a passenger on the bus.
Yeah, and I've nominated you the star of our upcoming Interviewing Nightmares episode.
Oh,
Just
I have a few stories.
Just so you know, my life has been very vanilla. I'm totally in shock. Okay, so let's just loop back sort of to, I think pre-qualifying is kind of a really nice to have. You know, if you have a really strong employer brand, you get the benefit of people self-selecting out, hopefully, although it depends somewhat on the market. But, you know, how do you incorporate this purpose that you're going to be selecting for, at least in part, into the job descriptions, the employer branding, your onboarding process? And then also, how do you dovetail that into the also public-facing brand that we talked about earlier? So how do we really work this into all the steps of the recruitment and attraction process?
Yeah, so I think for me, kind of four steps. I've alluded to a couple of them. One, I think including a purpose statement in your job description, obviously, has to be front and center. I think two, whether it's be defining or storytelling about cultural expectations by way of what are the unwritten rules of how to do things and how to be successful at company X, right?
I think that's
really, really important. I think three, since we're talking about purpose, is also about being able to showcase examples of corporate social responsibility integration. Or how the company does, or how some of the HR and people programs reflect what we're trying to prove. So for example, one of the things I've done in the past, we built this super skookum app that we could give people more meaningful work based on their happiness. So every time they would kind of like using professional services automation tool, they'd have drop down menus of whether you're in administration, whether you're in communication, where you're building, right? And then you'd attach a sentiment to it. So we would use all the metadata. And we could come out with an understanding, since we're in a consulting business, hey, Kim, when you're working with nonprofit customers as a business analyst, your sentiment is super high. Or when you're working in retail as a project manager, your sentiment is super low. So why don't we give you more work in the nonprofit space to keep your ethos and sentiment high? So I think that's just a great example to talk about, hey, do we put our money where our mouth is when it comes to purpose-based work, knowing that the most meaningful driver of happiness at work is working on things that are important to you. So in that particular business, from a consulting perspective, I'll give you more customers that you are more drawn to, right? So I think that's very important to be able to showcase the things that we do, that there's a relationship, like the, almost like that an ERD diagram. This policy reinforces this value, which links to kind of our purpose. And then I think from a marketing perspective, leveraging all those kind of customer stories, that logo slide, but translating that into the ethos, pathos, and logos so that we can get a good balance of people coming in to the company from a recruiting perspective, but then also make them find a way to stay with us and evolve their career too.
Yeah. And I think take it seriously because, you know, across the organization, like walk the talk. So I once did a survey with 15 different organizations as part of an association project I was involved in. And I was interviewing HR people, and I think 15 of them had core values and 5 of them could actually list them for me in the interview.
Wow.
Which is like how are you then aligning your hiring with your purpose when your HR people literally don't know what your core values that you have established are? They're on the wall. They didn't remember them.
How do you not only take them off the wall, but I also find in some of the culture work that I do with my clients that when you speak to employees and you ask them to define the culture of the organization, and then you go and you speak to executives and you ask them to define the culture of the organization, they're both very positive cultures, but they're often different. And so what then becomes the culture that you're hiring to, and how do you make sure that you're actually all living the values and that there is some level of bringing it to life in similar behaviors?
You know, one of the things I've had great success with doing that is we had to have our values decision matrix that we put in. So anytime we made a decision as a leadership team, we'd run it through our 5 core values. Does this make sense for value A? Does it make sense for value B? So that it became not just only a procedure for the executive team, but kind of filtered down. Okay, so we're going to do this. Does this make sense with value A, B? And if it fails that, then we're not going to move forward. And it just became so socialized and became culturally part of something that we did. And yeah, we made a big banner. Just it was about moving it off, right off the website, off the wall. But it's interesting because I think it's not a calm sea that makes a great sailor, right? So we can always talk about our values of our company, but when push comes to shove and things get shitty, that's when values truly come out. And I think that's what's really important is when we're storytelling is to also tell the tough stories, right? I think that is a more accurate portrayal is one of the questions I love asking in an interview, right? Just tell me about something that colossal failure in your, whether not hitting your sales numbers or what have you, and how did you respond? I think that's so critical. I think back to a past company, you know, during COVID hit, you know, our leadership team all took a 30% reduction in our salaries just to avoid any kind of initial layoffs, just to prevent, because we didn't know what was coming in the early days of COVID. We didn't know what was happening. We lost 85% of our bookings in 3 days, right? And I think telling that story, right, is, okay, this is how this company shows up. This is how the leadership of this company shows up. And so, yeah, we can say we're a people-first organization, but how do you truly tell, here's a great story? And I can tell you how the leadership team was not thrilled about it, but it was the right thing to do, and it wasn't very difficult to get people to buy in. So I think telling those stories where things aren't rose-colored glasses, and I think that's what really resonates, at least for me as a candidate. That's what I'm looking for is, hey, tell me some stories of really shitness. Like, how did you get through it? How did you band together? They'll also endear me to the company even further, whether it's me as a candidate or as a customer down the road.
I love that. So authentic, so counterintuitive, I think, to what most people do right now. I absolutely love that. I think that's great advice. Okay, last super formal question, and then we're going to move on to our rapid fire sale.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Love. Be ready. So all this said, how should a CHRO or the senior HR leadership measure the ROI of this purpose-based hiring? And what metrics indicate that you're really being successful with these initiatives?
There's so many metrics we can rely on, but I have just a couple that I really, I tend to gravitate towards. One for me is internal mobility rates. Kind of that job evolution. I've always been a real big fan of that. And I continue to report out on a quarterly basis of who's moved, who's not just promotion, but who's kind of gone cross-functionally. Because I always use this concept of the career jungle gym internally, and kind of using that, the London Tube or the New York Subway, is you're getting off, picking up new skills and moving. It isn't a linear path forward. It can be for some people, but it's not going to be in generality. And this is what I find exciting about this HR space, is being able to create these pathways forward for people. So that internal mobility rate is so important. And I think it's an interesting one, as opposed to just what's your retention rate, and then storytelling. I love also highlighting employee testimonials, right? And being able to build videos to show really interesting. I know lately really tried to focus on some technical females in roles, and just to try to show this non-linear, non-traditional, how did I get to where I am today? I started off X, and I think that's so powerful. Then visualize that into some kind of a creative visual as well to supplement the testimonial. And I think third, I think I really love to kind of highlight customer feedback as much as possible. It can be really difficult, but I think for me, I love leaning into the customer side. I always have, because it's so important. I always kind of look at, I think metrics in a company need to be triangular, right? And I think I've always, from an HR perspective, I've always looked at, yes, retention, but enjoyable work for people. And then ecstatic employees, was just trying to balance off the business with the people and then the retention side. So those are the three that I really look to. Of course, there's all the other, like retention and turnover, but also the new concept, you know, Danielle Charney from Mars, like I'm really embracing this employee lifetime value concept of, and really just trying to build that in as a new metric too, to kind of show just not just retention, but who should we be focusing on and have a different dollar value than just, oh, because all we typically hear is, oh, this is how much it costs when somebody leaves the company, or the cost of onboarding. But what's the value of taking that example from the customer lifetime value? Why shouldn't we apply that to the employee's perspective? But for me, I guess there's so much I get from the internal mobility. There's storytelling, there's pass forward, there's people that they become the advocate instead of me banging the drum. It becomes the employee that's taken the journey. So I love that piece.
I love that. All right. Now it's time for our rapid fire. So there's one question we ask all of our candidates, and then we've got some real rapid fire. What's the one thing you believe small businesses can do today to change the game for their people?
I'm going to revert back to one thing I've already said. Make recruitment a more senior function, and provide more gray-hairedness to it.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, and Jennifer, I know that you've already said that you wholeheartedly agree. It's interesting that the person who makes some of the most critical decisions on behalf of a company is often the most junior person.
And you know what I was thinking from an HR professional's perspective, I've always kind of been like, oh, it's great to start in recruitment because that's how you learn so much about the company. But you've got someone who's learning about the company, trying to hire critical roles for the company. And that's probably beneficial for the HR person's knowledge base, but not overly beneficial for the organization as a whole.
And you know where it came from? I spent a lot of my volunteer time helping new Canadians find work. Right. And so interesting because there's so many talented people coming into Canada, but it's not A equals A. There's an art form to this. Right. And I think that's where it became very frustrating to me, seeing all these people that are out of work that are so smart and have such high potential and we need them. Yet these recruiters are like, well, why are you taking this person right out of school? They have zero experience, as opposed to this list of newcomers to Canada that are going to be great employees. Are going to be, yes, there's going to be an adjustment period, but that's where it became really painful for me. And then also secondarily, especially I think back to 15 years ago, and we're all looking for the same tech talent because everyone's going from comp sci, trying to find different people with that same competency base. Like then I started compiling this list of, like, I think we ended up like 85 non-traditional hires, which ranged. I ended up hiring a plumber, brought him in, an IT tech consultant, no formal background, right? A helicopter mechanic came in and ended up in our marketing group. So I had like 85 of these stories. I mean, granted, we were high growth and ended up growing to about 1,500 people, but the principle of being able to bring in people that are aligned with your purpose that may not have the specific skills, but they can still add something, provided that we can bring them in the door and let them show themselves off in maybe a demo interview and show what they can do beyond just a resume.
Look, the one thing that potential is not going to get you is experience, right? You can have as much potential in the world, but it isn't going to give you the experience of someone, like you said, you know, looking at a candidate who may non-traditionally fit into a role, but you understand the key aspects of the role require something very different than just the technical skills. I love that story. That's great. Okay, ready, rapid fire. Okay. First job, Manu.
Paper delivery. A half cent a flyer when I was like 11 years old.
But you were 11.
You got paid at least.
Oh yeah, my paycheck was like $3 every 3 weeks. And it took me like 3 to 4 hours to stuff each flyer in. And then I started to go deliver them out. Look, this community newspaper, it was, hands would be black with ink. Yeah.
Best job.
I would have to say Traction on Demand thus far. I think it was just, I think I was the eighth person hired in there. We grew it to 1,600 people. I think it was just a real testament to truly building community. I have probably 25 or 30 family, I would say, from that. They're not only friends, but I know their families and their parents. And it's just been just a beautiful journey.
Biggest mess up at work.
This goes back a few jobs ago. We were in very heavy M&A activity. And I remember flying to the Bay Area. And for whatever reason, none of the rest of the executive team came down with me. And I was going down to do a site shutdown. Somehow this got out. And so my car's tires all got slashed in the building parking lot. It was kind of, what was that movie, Up in the Air?
Yeah.
The Grim Reaper. Yeah, that was my job for like a year solid, M&A site shutdowns and no support. But yeah, that was probably the minute. I still to this day do not know how that got out.
Slashing your tires did not inevitably stop the fact that you still had to terminate the people. Let's just be clear.
Yeah. We have to get it done one way or another, tires or not.
Right, all four. Like, that was a pretty serious message.
Really not good. Best learning.
You know, I think my best learning was my first big boy job, I would say, kind of after my master's. And I had a boss who was just amazing. And she took off on vacation after 4 months and asked me to cover. And this was a very large telco company at the time. So that was just having the ability to kind of cover for her for over 6 to 9 months, even though I was super fresh and had a lot of very heavy collective bargaining unit. So I learned a ton about labor relations there, trial and error. I think that was huge, getting slapped with like stickers and so forth.
And the final one, which is Jennifer's favorite question that I often have to explain to people, is quickest quit.
Yeah. I mean, I like to think I'm a very loyal person and I stick things out for a long time. There was a startup I was asked to help out on. I knew a lot of the team, loved what they were building, but still hadn't found product market fit. And I think after the first quarter of helping them out, they started doing retreats around the world, like global retreats for the whole team.
In bathing suits.
Sorry?
In bathing suits.
Well, yeah, I mean, this first trip was
Obviously.
to Milano in Italy, so I mean, they're absolutely going to be in bathing suits. All male team, I guess. Does that make a
Oh,
difference?
okay. A
I don't
little
know.
different.
But yeah, it just felt wrong. I mean, it felt wrong to when we for to me to not have product market fit yet, not have an active customer base yet. We're doing retreats for the company, and this for me really hit my ethics, my values. I mean, yeah, I want to go to Italy, and I love the team, but I couldn't reconcile. Because I've always come from bootstrap background, it was very difficult for me to parlay that into, yes, it's okay for me to go.
I love that. Thank you so much.